proxy powers in the director or in the compensation board. I really don't. If you accept Dr. Representative Rogers, there's a cardiologist in Portland, Representative Rogers, by the name of Dr. Rogers, and I subconsciously speak to him in my sleep sometimes.
This is one of those doctors that you shop for that I'm told.
Well, that is an insurance company doctor.
Oh, I
who they have shopped and bought, by the way. In all fairness, Dr. Rogers is now coming around and he's very objective. The director, if you... put the policy decision makings in the compensation board, then it takes away that particular fear I have. But then if you remove the board from the appeals process, I really don't know what the board is going to do. You want to know the truth, and I don't see any need for a director. So the real problem, as I envision it, and listening to testimony on the Senate side since the session began, the criticism the board became apparent that they were not administering the law because they had too much to do. They were reviewing appeals, which I believe Chairman Wilson testified, who were one of the members, take up 80% of their time. And as a result, they have a vast agency to administer, and they just don't have the time to do it. They have an executive director now, and I've had ever since I've been aware of the board.
Dave, let me stop you there, though. This executive director, however, is not a statutory director.
Correct.
And is not appointed by the governor.
That's correct.
So there is a great deal of difference between that director and the director.
There's a great deal of difference in that, but their similarity is their job is the same. So why statutorily create another appointed position, which in my opinion creates more bureaucracy underneath them when he's going to do the same thing as an existing director does now? I don't see that it accomplishes anything. Added to that, the fear, as I said before, the original 1050 bill in the Senate gave the director all the powers. Not only gave him powers, but mandated that he shall set rules for evaluation of disabilities and this sort of thing. Which to me is utterly fearful, because that man, having worked there and having been around that for 10 years, has a tremendous amount of power. Tremendous amount of power. And if you politicize that into one man, it frightens me to death. That's the reason you have a compensation board, and have had since 1910, representing the three interest groups. So you avoid this politicized. That's why I do not like and I'm fearful of director's position.
In your recommendation, you take out the board, but it seems that one of the arguments you're saying is that one man could make a decision, and here with a board you have three people making a decision. Are you opposed to the board because the hearing is on fact and they're not attorneys in all cases, or?
No.
You're saying that's the way to streamline is to take the board out.
Yes, in other words, I said before, Representative Lindquist, the criticism of the board was that they did not administer the law. They didn't pay attention to their agency. In my opinion, the reason is because they were bogged down with appeals.
So if they were not bogged down with the policy part of it, you wouldn't really be opposed to them staying in the appeals procedure if they had more time to do that.
If you leave the circuit court in de novo, no, I don't. But as I say, to me, I have to keep in mind, and I submit that I ask you to, what I said earlier, in my opinion, what bothers me is the check and balance of the system. That's what the circuit court is for. I don't frankly care if you leave the board in or take them out.
That's the point of it.
If you have the circuit court de novo as a check and balance. But I don't think it's fair to the board to ask him to review all these cases, and as they have testified, they really don't. All three people review the cases now. They don't even have time. they've got a lot to do. And if you take them out of the appeals process, let them administer this board efficiently, and let the circuit court act as a check and balance, to me, that's the ideal system. Then if you go substantial evidence to the Court of Appeals, you are going to again eliminate at least a 7/8 of that step, because if you go substantial evidence, it is in effect saying questions of fact will not be touched, only questions of law. And if you look at the cases that go to the Court of Appeals, all 75-80% are questions of fact. So with that proposal, you are in a sense removing 1 point, the 1 7/8 steps in the appeal process. You're allowing the board to administer this law as they should have been all along. If you remember back, 10 years ago under SIAC, you had a 3-member board. They didn't review it. They administered the law, and they have since 1910. They didn't review cases. All of a sudden, you created a compensation board and said you shall do the same thing, administer the law, and you shall do all this other. It's too much.
Well, let me go another step. We have a graph here that shows 994 hearing orders on extended disability, and then 734 board orders. And it goes on to say 290 circuit court judgments of 333 cases appealed. If we take out the board and we have the full review by the circuit court, are we not actually saying then that those 734 cases that went to the board would have gone to circuit court then if we take the board out?
Yes and no, because it does not break down who appealed those to the board. Now, very frankly, in all deference to Mr. Wilson, the people of the board, the board reduces the claimant's award more than it increases it. So it's an incentive to the employer to appeal to the board presently. There's no question about that. You talk to any defense attorney and they'll tell you that. We will appeal to the board. If you remove them, they're not going to be that quick to appeal to the circuit court. So you're not going to automatically take that segment and stick it in the circuit court. No. It's going to increase it. I don't get any question about that.
Mr. Chemedale, that's funny. Now, that's AOI's response when I talk about all those cases going to the Court of Appeals. They say you're just not going to have that many if you take the circuit court out of it.
If you go with substantial evidence, they're right. As I said, and I can't impress upon you enough, substantial evidence means one thing, only questions of law. That means no issues of permanent total disability, temporary total disability, permanent partial disability, or temporary partial disability will be decided by the Court of Appeals.
You're saying that if the board is taken out of
That isn't a legal position. That's just a
committee will come back to order. I have a standing rule at the committee on night hearings. I promised them all that we would be out of here no matter what happens at 10 o'clock. It's a very, very tough issue, and it's obvious that we're not going to resolve it tonight because, as I've told you before, but looking around the committee, I don't think that there's two votes on any position to do anything yet. Now, I'm not going to take that motion at table 1050, Representative Winkler.
Wait, Carl. You thought he was sleeping when he said that.
That was just an attempt to wake you up, Carl. Go ahead, Dave.
In an attempt to answer your question, Representative Rogers, what I'm trying to say is that if the referee awards a claimant a permanent total award, uh-huh, and it is appealed by the employer to the Workman's Compensation Board, the employer is thinking, trying to evaluate what his chances are in getting that reversed versus what costs he has to go through insofar as their attorneys are concerned. He feels, if that employer feels, that insurance company feels, that they have a fairly good chance they'll appeal it to the compensation board. And as I said, frankly, their results have been pretty good, and they remove the total.
Dave, let me throw in something here. According to this chart, it says that the board increased the hearings officer 5.2% of the cases and decreased it 6.3%.
That's on permanent partial awards.
No, this is on all. This
I don't have
all. And that's 0.9% difference. And you're saying that the employers only bet on the fact that the board leans toward the employer?
Well, let's put it this way. They've got a better shake there than they do in the circuit court.
That's my point.
I'm sorry.
My point is that they have a better chance of getting that referee's decision reduced at the board level than they do at the circuit court level, and that is why they're appealed to the board.
That's not what these statistics say.
Mm-hmm. Let's see if I can figure this thing out.
Look at that second bar graph. It says 80.7% of the time they affirm the hearing officer. And we go up to the next point, 5.2% of the time they increase the award. And the next block says 6.3% of the time they decrease the award.
That's on all issues, as you see down below that, though, you see. That is not a permanent total.
Sure,
That's a big distinction. I'm talking about permanent totals. You can talk about rejects, you can talk about penalty questions, you can talk about time loss questions. Those are different. And as Mr. Kennedy was saying, this is a very specialized field. And there are certain feelings about certain issues. There isn't any question in my mind that I could have 15 defense attorneys tell you that they will appeal a permanent total case to the board every time without any question, because they have a pretty good chance of getting it reduced. If you took the board out and had to go to circuit court, they would think twice about even appealing. Now, that's a fact. Any question about that?
Where's all your data to substantiate that?
I don't have all the data. But as you can see from the figures that Mr. Kulongowski read on the permanent totals, how many totals were taken away, reinstated by the circuit court?
Dave, I hit this very quickly. It almost looks like the same number that the Court of Appeals took away from the circuit court.
That's very possible.
It is.
That's very possible. And there has been a very, very big change in the Court of Appeals in their thinking. There's no question about that. And that reflected in that stat.
I've got two questions. You've got a copy of the bill there. If you look on page 7, I'm going to just very briefly, these always bother me when I go through these things. At the bottom of the page, lines 33, 34, and 35 on page 7 in lines 1 and 2, where it says, however, if the doctor or vocational counselor believes furnishing any medical or vocational information would be detrimental to a workman, such information need not be furnished to him, but shall upon request be furnished to his attorney or other representative. My own feeling is that statement is unconstitutional. On the grounds that if a claimant can be his own attorney, I don't know how in the world you can ever deny him the evidence.
I think you're probably right. That's been in existence, I imagine, for a while, and as far as I know, it's never been tested.
Okay.
But, of course, I would know because I'm an attorney and I get the medical, so I know the guy that does it.
Okay.
But he very well may be right.
Okay. The second point that I want to make, and this is just, I want you to know that it hasn't been resolved yet in the bill. On page 14, section 14, lines 12 through 24, that statute had to do with attorney fees at the circuit court level. Now, the way 1050 is written, it eliminates the circuit court, and the court it talks about in awarding attorney fees is the Court of Appeals determining that factual dispute. And it would appear to me that if the bill, as Anglo-Senate Bill 1050 is, it would seem to me that the board should be the one to determine that attorney fee question rather than the court, because the court that they were talking about was a circuit court, and if that's eliminated, I just don't see what the Court of Appeals is doing in that process, getting involved in that attorney fee arrangement. Would you agree with that?
I think I would agree that the Court of Appeals shouldn't be involved in attorney fee disputes, yes.
Okay.
I'm not convinced that the board should be either.
No, I know that. I just want to get in there. Okay, Dave. Thank you. 5 minutes to 10, and I think the committee is well aware of the problems of, and the different issues with 1050. I want to say that I want to give Mr. Green and Mr. Frederick and all the other employer representatives the opportunity to testify again if they want to on 1050 and some of the statements that were said. It's just me again personally. I happen to believe that the issue with the elimination of the board of the circuit court is a policy decision, and there isn't that much fiscal impact in it. And I really don't believe that anyone has really argued that. You've heard the one side of why they believe it should stay, why it should stay in the system. It's a checks and balance. And I would just ask that the employers and anyone else that testifies in opposition to their position address that issue and rebut that statement, because I understand Mr. Krieger's position on that, and I think it does have merit to it. The next thing, I'm not going to get to 1048 tonight. The next thing that I would like to tell you is that there has been a caucus called by the Democrats, certain Democrats, at 8 o'clock in the morning. Four of the Democrats that are called a caucus are sitting right here in this committee. I would hope would be done by 8:30 or 8:45, and I'll make every effort to do that. I do not intend to start the meeting at 8 o'clock because there's only going to be 3 people here.
Session starts at 10.
I know.
We could probably make quite a few decisions.
We could serve a very good supper.
It could be a supper.
I'm going to tell you, Representative Rogers, though you trust me as explicitly as you do and you leave to lead the four of us here, I can assure you I would never do the same for you.
That's because there are four of you anyway.
So
you couldn't find anything out.
I would say this, that the hearing will probably start, I will make every effort to have it start by 8:30 or somewhere in there, because I do want to get to some of the bills that we have on that agenda. There's just nothing that we can do about it, because I have to be there. Is there anything else to come before the committee?
Mr. Chairman, I wonder if we could hold up 2237 just to take a look at these amendments. Mr. Kalinowski was talking about earlier on that, and we made a judgment not to do that, but he has some language now just roughly drafted.
Okay, that'd be fine. Why don't you give that to the clerk and have the council, the committee look at that, and if you want to, he can bring it back before the committee at that time. Hearing nothing else to come before the committee, we're adjourned.